In 1792, the surveyor Peter Fidler examined the plains of southern Alberta systematically, the first European to do so. Riding with several groups of Indians in high fire season, he spent days on end in a scorched land. "Grass all burnt this day," he reported on November 12th. "Not a single pine to be seen 3 days past." A day later, "All burnt ground this day." A day later, "The grass nearly burnt all along this day except near the lake." A month later, "The grass is now burning with very great fury." Every fall and spring, and even in the winter, when there is no snow, these large plains, either in one place or other, is constantly on fire. And when the grass happens to be long and the wind high, the sight is grand and awful, and it drives along with amazing swiftness. Fidler acknowledged that the fires could be very dangerous, but understood their purpose. "These fires burning off the old grass," he observed, "in the ensuing spring and summer, makes excellent fine sweet feed for the horses and buffalo, etc." When Indian societies disintegrated from disease and mistreatment, forest invaded savanna in Wisconsin, Illinois, Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, and the Texas Hill Country. Europeans forgot what the landscape had looked like before and why. Captain John Palliser, traveling through the same lands as Fidler 6 decades later, lamented the Indians' disastrous habit of setting the prairie on fire for the most trivial and worse than useless reasons. Afterward, even the memory of indigenous fire faded. By the 20th century, biologists were stoutly denying its existence. The open, park-like woods, seen by early settlers, Harvard naturalist Hugh Raup asserted in 1937, were not caused by fire. They have been, from time immemorial, characteristic of vast areas in North America. Raup's summary description of the idea that they were due to regular, wide-scale Indian burning? Inconceivable. It is at least a fair assumption, a widely used college forestry textbook remarked in 1973, that no habitual or systematic burning was carried out by Indians. In the western United States, the geographer Thomas R. Vail wrote in 2002, the modest Indian population modified only a tiny fraction of the total landscape for their everyday living needs. Vail is in the minority now. Spurred in part by historians like Cronin, most scientists have changed their minds about Indian fire. Using clever laboratory techniques, they have convinced themselves that in most cases, the tribal lore and old chronicles were right all along. Indian embers were sparkling in the American night for centuries before the Sumerians climbed their ziggurats. Carrying their flints and torches, Native Americans were living in balance with nature. But they had their thumbs on the scale. Shaped for their comfort and convenience, the American landscape had come to fit their lives like comfortable clothing. It was a highly successful and stable system, if stable is the appropriate word, for a regime that involves routinely enshrouding miles of countryside in smoke and ash. And it was a system that Indians were abandoning in ever-rising numbers at the time when Europeans came.